Good evening and welcome to the MGEV Screenty Podcast, streaming live on Tuesday, 22nd of October, 2024. We're here to discuss MGEVs and we're hoping to inform and entertain you for up to an hour. I'm Tom Sedge, T Sedge, on the forum. I live in Paignton and Devon, and I'm currently driving the MG4 that you see in the picture behind me. Joining us this week, returning again from South London, we have Leo Mindell. Welcome, Leo.
Thank you, Tom. Hi. Yes, I'm joining you live from Cyberster for show people around.
Fantastic. We have our correspondent on the scene, which is we're breaking new ground here on the podcast. And from Derby in England, returning again, we have John Sponsmith. Welcome, John.
Hi, good to be back. Thanks. Just got my Cyberster 1 week. I've had it now. So got
Fantastic.
lots to say about it.
Fantastic. Great. Thanks, John. And from Hertfordshire, England, making his debut appearance, we have Neil Marshall. Welcome, Neil.
Hi, nice to meet you all. I'm a Cyberster owner. I got mine 2 weeks ago today, and first EV car as well, so an EV Virgin.
Right, fantastic. It'd be good to hear what you think of it as your first time EV owner as well. And also joining us from Chorley Group MG in England, the Innovation Development Manager, Miles Roberts. Welcome, Miles.
Hi everyone, Miles Roberts, CG on the forum.
Great, good to see you again, Miles. Right, looking forward to and it excited about this particular episode. Now, if folks, if you see me turning green, it's envy because these guys are all either owning or driving Cybersters day to day, and I'm not. So I shall be mostly listening on this one. Now, if you're watching live, thank you, and please tell us where you're joining from in the comments window. Please add your questions and comments for the panel and click the like button. If you're watching later, thank you for choosing to watch this video, and please subscribe to get a notification when we go live next time. Many thanks to our premium members. That's Rick M1, Sloucher, MGBGT2ZS, Very Fat Bloke, EV Cog, Whiskery, and Lager Blue, and Big Bear. And if you like what we do at MGEVs, please support us by becoming a premium member. So tonight we have the Cyberster on UK shores. We have new owners, and we are very excited to hear about their experiences. So we'll jump straight into it. So, guys, I want to ask you each of you in turn about your first ownership impressions, and please do tell us how many miles you've done because that seems to be a point of competition already. We'll start with Neil as it's your debut. Neil, what's your first impressions as a Cyberster and a first-time EV owner?
So, first impressions were very positive, I have to say. I would describe myself as an out-and-out petrol head. I love cars, I love petrol, anything to do with any degree of transport, really. I did come to it slightly skeptically. Over the last couple of weeks, the car really, really has grown on me. I'm just coming up towards 300 miles. I'll just click over that tomorrow. So I haven't done a great deal of mileage in it yet, but really, really enjoying driving it. And as I say, it's exceeded my expectations of what it was going to be like.
Fantastic. Thank you. That's good to hear. And John, let's hear about your experiences. And I think you've done more miles, or the most perhaps so far.
Yeah, I claim the mileage cup. I've done over 500 miles now. You guys are just beginners. Come on, get catch up. I've only had it a week, Neil. My first impressions are that it's beautiful. I mean, it is beautiful. And everybody who sees it says, gosh, that's beautiful. It's just a lovely machine to look at. But I knew that anyway. What I've now found is I think it's my everyday car. I think it's a great, practical, everyday car. My other, which we can talk more about later, but my other first impression is that I think I'm reasonably techie, but boy, it doesn't half take some figuring out. And I think, anybody who's a bit iffy about modern day technology should have a good hard think about whether they can handle this. It does take some work. But
Yeah,
that's
that's
fun.
it.
To me, that's fun. So, but that
Yeah,
they're
I
my
guess.
first impressions. So.
Great. Thank you, John. I guess you've gone what from two screens to four screens, or you've got
That's right.
other vehicles.
Well, from no screens to two screens to four screens.
Yeah, exactly. Great. Thank you. And Leo, as our roving reporter, what is your experiences and how many miles have you done?
I'm at 240 miles. No, sorry, I'm wrong. I'm at 326 miles. It's just been amazing. It's a really lovely car to drive. It's a lovely car to sit in as a passenger as well. And it, the thing, so I'm using it differently to how John is. This is our car that we are planning to do road trips on. This is our car that we're going to plan to do distance on when we go some places. And the thing that my partner and I both felt is that the minute we drive out the driveway, wherever we're going in this car, it feels special. And that's it. It just feels a bit different from our day-to-day cars. As you'll know, I've got an MG5 as my day-to-day. And my partner, she's got an ID3. So we're three electric cars now. Yeah. So it's a very different thing, but it's so different to drive than those two. So different.
Fantastic. Good to hear. And Miles, how has it been? You've been continuing to drive them after your initial road trips, but you've also been handing over the keys and welcoming people to the Cyberstereo ownership experience. So what are your impressions?
So, sorry, guys, I've actually done about 950 miles I've just been working out in Cyberstereo.
unfair advantage not the
same,
there.
Not the same car each time, though. I've done it across a few different vehicles. My... Very much like Leo just said, whenever you drive somewhere, it does feel special. So I had a Cyberstereo this last weekend because I took it to a car show, to a petrol heads car meet, sort of coffee and cars type thing. There's a place called The Motorist near Leeds, and I took it there for a British car show. So it was Aston Martins, Bentleys, lots and lots of Jaguars, and me. In the MG Cyberstar. And the good thing about it being amongst that competition is that mine was the only one with vertical doors, so it stood out very much like flags. Come look at me in the car park. So I had a good couple of hundred people come chat to me about it. I mean, it was a fairly damp, wet day. I didn't have the roof down that long because in the morning it was raining. Did have the doors up most of the time though, and everyone that sort of came and sat in it was just amazed by the. Well, this is an MG. I didn't realize we're doing cars like this. You know, there were lots of people there who had like Jaguar F types. I say there was a couple of people there also with Porsche 911s and Astons and things like that, you know. And so they were coming from a fairly high premium brand experience to compare it against the MG. And like one guy got into the Cyberstar and went, well, this just makes my F type look really old fashioned. He says, you know, it's still got the grab handle. The oh shit handle, as he called it, because that's for the passengers and they grab on.
Yeah.
It's the interior just basically looks like an updated version of the F-Type. The side profile very similar to the F-Type. The front end, a lot of people were saying sort of McLaren or Maserati, and the back people were comparing to, again, sort of Aston or Lotus. In fact, there was a Lotus Evira parked next to me in the show. So
that's interesting that you mentioned the comparisons. Let's see what other people. I mean, how does this compare to other cars? Does anyone here owned another convertible or a similar car, or just, you know, give us your impressions as to how you think this compares? What you notice is different.
Well, my other convertible is an MGF, so I don't think that I don't think it's any comparisons are ludicrous, but I can't really compare it to anything I've ever owned, to be honest.
I've got three other convertibles, and in fairness, my wife's got an F-Type. So it's the car that's been most often described as similar to the Cyberstar. And it's interesting. I always thought the F-Type was a fantastic looking car, but then having the two of them together, you can see the Cyberstar has just moved that on one further step. And I think it looks a little bit better than the F-Type, which is undoubtedly a good looking car. But build quality, I think, is very good as well. You know, if you compare it to that type of product, they seem to be very well put together. The interior feels nice to touch. It's very tactile.
What's it like space-wise compared to the F-Type? Because, you know, they're both quite large cars.
Yeah, they are. So interior-wise, it's pretty much almost identical. The criticism I would lay at the Cyberstar is the one that's been said by most people, and that's the height of the seat. It just needs to be a little bit lower. It, you know, it's not terrible, but it just feels slightly unnatural being that high in a sports car. The biggest area where the Cyberstar scores over the F-Type, though, is the boot. I don't know if you've ever seen inside an F-Type boot, but it's a really odd shape and an odd layout, and it's got the indent in the middle of it. It doesn't work very well. It's not practical. Very difficult to get suitcases in, whereas at least in the Cyberstar, you'll get a decent case in there.
Oh, fantastic. That sounds like a lot. But out of interest, what are the other convertibles you own?
I've got a Lotus Elise Series 1 and a McLaren 650.
All right, so very
So I
different
am a petrol
experiences.
head.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in fairness, I did. I came from a admittedly a fairly old 2010. 911s come to the Cyberster. And the decision was always about it's the MG Cyberster was the only electric two-seater sports car, and I wanted to go electric for a variety of different reasons.
Yeah. So how does the drive compare? Because many people have talked about it being a sort of soft GT car feel. How does that compare to the other cars you've got and you've driven in the past?
Yeah, and that describes it very well, actually. It's not a car that you jump into and want to drive with your foot flat to the floor all the time, and although it is ridiculously quick, the speed's just amazing in it. It really is. It does sort of encourage you to drive in a more sensible fashion and just enjoy the whole experience rather than being absolutely on the ragged edge every time.
That's good to know. That sounds great. Okay, fantastic. So let's talk a little bit about your collection experiences. Who'd like to start us off with how collection was, what you experienced and how it went? I know some of you may have collected from Miles, but be honest.
Yeah, so we went up by train the night before. It was the easiest way. It turned into a nightmare, but that's another matter, nothing to do with the collection. And it was a really nice experience. It's funny, we were comparing it on the way back down to when we picked up the ID3 and when I picked up the MG5. The 5 wasn't too bad. The ID3 was like the keys were in the air and you had to catch them and then out the door. And you were like, it was sort of semi just past COVID, but it just felt like they wanted us out and gone. They had more to do, so many. So it was a very nice experience. I think it's because the car is what the car is as it is. And what's really nice that they did at Chorley is they did a reveal from underneath the underneath a red blanket cloth. And you do look at it, and I think Neil touched on it already, that there is something about the look of the car. There is something about the lines on the car. And actually, the more you look at it, there's some very clever things that I think the lines are. There's scoops in the front grille that take out to the air off onto the tires. And you look at it and you just go, oh, that's quite nice how they've done that. And then there's also outs by the side. There's vents out by the side, just behind the wheels. And it's just done in such a nice. You know, it's like there's a little bit retro, there's a little bit Formula One of some description. I'm trying to, you know, where they've actually sat there and modelled this. And it isn't just a, you know, a box. There is some very nice touches how they've done it. And you can look at the front of there and you can see it on the pictures that are being put up there. And you can look at the front and how the grille is broken in half. So when you have a reveal of that, and I think I'd seen the car for about an hour before. You know, I sat in one for, you know, about 2 minutes with Miles about 4 weeks before. So literally, the other guy who was picking it at the same time was also, it's the first time he had even seen it. And he bought it off the paper. And I don't think it disappointed. So I think the whole experience was very good.
Great, because I mean, this is MG going for a different market, a different in the main, probably a different kind of customer who's used to a premium marks, more of a premium experience and feel. John, did you feel your collection experience lived up to that?
Yeah, I mean, it was, yeah, I got it from Chorley as well. And I have to say, I think, oh, was that anybody getting feedback then? Was all right.
You're right now.
And I have to say that, you know, I think they really understood that this was a special car and it was a special experience for the people buying it. And it was a really nice bit of theatre. It was well done. The cover and everything. I was getting a bit fed up with it being under a cover after about half an hour. I wanted to see the damn thing, but it was great, and it made it a special experience. It was a goodie bag, a friendly sales guy. They gave me a free charge cable. Can't believe a car comes without a charge cable. Admirable lack of paperwork. Everything was done online, which was great. And the only thing I would say is there was sort of fairly limited instruction as to how to use it, but I'm okay with that. And the only thing I feel a bit bad about is I'd come straight from the airport, Manchester Airport, after an overnight from Africa, and I probably wasn't quite as appreciative as I should have been. So if you just pass that on, Miles, I was a bit knackered, and I may not have.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's fair enough. Yeah,
yeah. but it was great, and not like any other car. I agree with what Leo said. I think every other car I've ever bought, they throw you the keys and you bugger off as quickly as possible. And,
yeah. Thanks, John. That's great. So, Neil, how was yours? Because you must have quite high expectations, given the other cars that you own and your history.
I did have higher expectations, but I wish I bought it from Chorley now, actually, from the sounds of it, because that sounds exactly the sort of experience that I was expecting. I went in to collect the car and paid my money and we drove off. And that was pretty much it. I would have liked a little bit of time going through it, because apart from a 5-10 minute test drive with the Cyberster a week or so before, I'd never driven an EV, so I had really no experience of how to drive one, even. So I would have appreciated a little bit more, but you know, it's kind of what it is, really. I ended up getting mats and two charger cables with mine. A friend of mine also picked one up last week, and ended up not getting mats with it, which you kind of think in a car like that, he ended up having to pay £90 for a set of mats from the dealer while he was there, and it just took the shine off what was something he was really looking forward to and really excited about. But I mean, going back to one of the points somebody made a second ago, I think MG have got a real opportunity to make this a real sort of halo and premium car. It's a little brand new. And, you know, I hope they manage it well with regard to the supply of cars and helping to manage the depreciation to be as low a possible percentage as it can be.
Yeah, I think much of that will depend on the numbers being produced. And Miles, do we know any more about that?
I haven't got any sales figures as yet, but I mean, they've only been registered sort of this last month, so we probably won't get any registration numbers just yet. But the one thing that may help residuals is that all dealer demonstrators are on 18-month contracts, so they're not going to be out in the field within 6 months like a typical demonstrator would be. They're going to be retained for 18 months, which should then mean that, you know, there's not like a flurry of used ones appearing on the market in any short period of time. So yeah, I think that should help residuals, because that's the killer usually, is that, you know, and particularly in the market we're at the moment with the used EVs, is that there's such pressure to sell more new numbers that the used ones kind of get forgotten about, and then that's why there's quite a reduction in price, because everyone just goes, well, we really want to sell you a new one, so you can have like £5,000 off this new ID4, whatever it is, or there's that used one over there. Well, if it's a used one, you're going to want £10,000 off it, aren't you? You're not going to want, you know, it's not going to be a low level of reduction. So, So yeah, and I think that, you know, we've seen that with like Nissan Leaf, where the pre-reg Leaf have been sold for like £17,000. It's supposed to be a £32,000 car. So, you know, their own pressure to do those sales numbers on new cars to hit that ZEV mandate means that it has a knock-on on residuals, unfortunately. So I think 18-month contract should help that.
Good.
It's interesting you're saying about an 18-month contract, because almost by definition of that, I presume it means that they're not looking to upgrade or change the car or introduce a newer model for a couple of years at least.
I would have hoped not in the next 18 months, otherwise we're going to have demonstrators which are, like you say, inaccurate. But whether they might, and there's the talk of whether the Cyber GTS might come online, you know, the 2+2 coupe version. And certainly a number of the F-Type owners who were the motorist on Saturday were, you know, sort of expressing an interest in that, despite the fact that you can't really fit anything on the back seat unless it's been, you know, amputated, as it has no legs. There's maybe a small pocket dog or something like that, but no, it's... those little chihuahuas or something might fit, but in terms of actual people, probably less chance. But just having a hard top made more sense for some people. Although yeah. I think that I personally love the soft top.
Yeah, that all makes sense. I mean, clearly MG are trying to transition. And on in the chat, Chris Gray has commented that he had a similar red cover reveal showroom experience. And also, he makes a comparison with an SLK that he previously owned, which he felt that it reminds him of. So yeah, MG transitioning from selling more towards the bottom of the market, cheaper cars, high volumes, and then having the Cyberster as this premium halo product in the branch is going to be an interesting challenge for some. It sounds like some dealers are doing better than others to actually give
Yeah.
that premium experience.
I think if you take it, go on from there from the car itself, Tom, I think the two things which are definitely premium, I
Go for
think
it.
the design is premium. I think the hardware build is solid, really feels solid. Everything about the car, everything inside it, everything outside it. I've only got one little minor gripe on the hardware side, for me that I can think of. The fuel filler cap, or whatever you want to call it, it just doesn't quite line up on mine in the mirrors. I don't know if either of you've looked at it in the mirrors. You're now going to look at it in your mirrors when you're driving. It just doesn't quite line it. Like it just needs to be touched in somewhere.
That's really going to annoy
Hardware.
me now,
No, I know.
Leo.
It did to me. Hardware, brilliant. Software, it's like a 1.0 beta. There is some that's brilliant. There's some it's like there's a. I mean, I can show you because I've got the second screen just very quickly.
Sure, dive in.
And I don't know what the guys also show think. This screen over here, which is the one on the right, half of it is covered by half of it consists of a menu to tell you where the nearest dealer is, where the nearest service is. And why to get a test drive? Well, I don't know about you, but if you're sitting in the car already, I don't actually know why you want a test drive. It's like you filled a load of menus up with things that you can't think of. And one of the first, and a standard everybody who drives MGs knows, bongs, 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 bongs. The first bong to turn off is this one here, which is about a weather broadcast. And the weather broadcast, every time you get in the car, it tells you that it's weather is this, it's you're in the middle of somewhere, and it's and drive safely. And you're like going, shut up, shut up. It's like you're talking to me because you're bored. Go away. So that off, gone. And there's about
Got it.
another five or six of the bongs. Anybody, Tom, you know about this, Miles, you know about it. They love MG have always loved the bong. And you're just trying to
John and
find all the
Neil, is that,
ones.
would you say the same about the software?
Well, yeah, I'm indebted. I mean, I'm sorry. Go on, Neil.
No, you go first.
I'm indebted to Miles telling me how to get rid of the bloody weather warning and then drive safely and stuff. I couldn't work out that because it's not obvious how to turn that off at all. You know,
It's not.
I didn't click that turn the weather forecast off was going to turn that off. But yeah, it's not. It's quirky, isn't it? It's not without its quirks. I mean, yeah. Are we getting into the niggles now, are we, Tom, or what? Or
I'm just interested in whether you agree about the software, really, because we started talking
well,
about the build. Clearly, the build quality is there. Clearly, the design is there. And
well,
I've
I'm
heard
con
other people say the materials are good, but I'm interested in the software because that has been an Achilles heel for other MGEVs recently.
Well, I'm comparing it to my ZS EV, or now my wife's ZS EV, and that was. Yeah, that is so much simpler. There's so much less selection. That now, in retrospect, seems quite straightforward. Although when I first got it, I
Is
thought that
that a
was
Mark One or a Mark Two or
Mark II, the long range. I
right?
had initially the Mark One and then the long range, but there's no difference in the software between the two that I can remember. Nothing significant anyway. But there's so much more in the Cyberster to get your head around. So it is definitely quirky, yeah.
Yeah, I think it might depend on what you're used to because I'll come to Neil in a second. I've certainly I know one or two people who've owned McLarens who've had absolutely terrible software systems. So, Neil, what do you make of it?
I absolutely love the software in it. For me, coming from it would say the car that I had before was 2010, so it's 14 years old. So the tech in it was probably, getting on towards 17, 18 years old, something like that. So I find the cyber stuff fascinating. I'm just spending hours scrolling through all the different screens. I'm finding different menus almost every day. Whether you swipe something down or swipe it to the right or whatever. So and the bongs. They don't actually bother me that much. I can sort of tune out of them, and I know I can turn most of them off. Leo, you absolutely hit the nail on the head, though. That weather bong was the most annoying thing in the world. From day one, that was the first thing I turned off.
The other one that had to go off, Neil, was the one about every time it changed the speed changes. Because, and what they haven't done is they haven't told you why it's bonging. So there's nothing to, so you're hearing this beep and you're going, a door
Why?
open, what's the
Yeah.
matter?
Am I
And there
about to
are some other
crash?
quirks like this.
Yeah.
I'm about to crash. One of the other quirks, I'm sure you may have come, when you stop and you're turning left or right, if somebody walks past you, your sat navigation goes off and is replaced by a 3D map, a 3D surround picture of the cameras. Okay, that's great for safety. But when you're sitting there going, am I going left at this roundabout? Or am I going the next one? I don't know anymore. So you have to find out, and there is a way around it. I don't know if Miles has known, but there is a way around it, which is that this button here turns the 3D mapping on and off. So if I turn it on, you can see the 3Ds come on, and if I turn it off, it goes off. So that's that button. But until you realize you have to do that, you just don't know. And one of the other things I'm going to say, I think that this, oh, sorry if I'm bouncing around a bit. I think
A little bit lower, please, Leah.
The dash itself, sorry, the dash itself, sorry, my camera's going to focus. The dash itself, I just think that they haven't done it very well. You get two options. You get the other option, which is this one here. I just don't think it's that smart, considering they spent all of the, or they put in Unreal Engine 4, which is a very high graphics package. It's sort of, the quality of the graphics here are sort of equivalent to my Commodore 64 from the 1980s. It's like you could have done better on this. Even have you noticed that the car, the picture of your car is like, it's only lit at the back and not the front of it, and in there. Is it just my one? It's like it's gone dim at the front. But look, I see this as work in progress. I think it's all stuff that could be improved. I think it's something that, if that's the problem, if my problem is software, and if we have over-the-air updates, which it says it does, then I have no problems.
I mean, I have to say, Leo, you're not really convincing me because I'd still like to have one, even with those graphics. But I take your point. It could be done better, and it's certainly some of the in-car dashboards are quite amazing these days. So let's go over to Miles for what do we know about updates, improvements, and software? I presume there's a stream of feedback going back to MG UK, for example, as early owners and dealers are using the car.
Yeah, I mean, whether there will be any software updates, well, the question, the car has the ability to do software updates over the air. There's even a, you'll find that hopefully in the general settings, you can go and do request it, see if there's an update. There are currently no updates available. Whether that's because the server isn't actually speaking to the thing and it's just going, nah, we're not going to update you, or whether it's because there aren't currently any updates released, I don't know. I suppose the issue is yeah, I mean, it's there's certain things that I've noticed that I, you know, there's a fault I noticed, well, fault, a problem that I noticed, which is that if you have auto wipers on, so they're intermittently on, and you open the driver's door, it sweeps water into the inside of the door card. Now, I made a very sensible, I think, sensible request to MG, which was basically, we're putting a line of code, which is if driver's door open, then don't wipe screen. You know, it basically, you know, it would literally be some, you know, two lines of code like that, which would be very simple to implement, I would have thought. It doesn't matter about the passenger side because it sweeps water away from that side, but on the driver's side, it literally just throws it all inside the door card. So you have to remember to turn the auto wipers off, because if you basically, if you leave the auto wipers on and it's raining, if you at the point when you unlock the door, it goes, oh, hello, wake up the car, starts, you know, turning itself on, and that's when it just goes, oh, water on the windscreen. I'll just give that a quick sweep, slush, straight into the side door. So that's an issue. People have commented a bit on Facebook as well, and I'm pulling the forum about the door sensors and the upper door sensor in heavy rain. If it's got water pooled on top of it, basically. the door thinks that it's going to hit something because the sensor's got water bubble on it. It doesn't go up very far. It just pops up a little tiny bit. The trouble is, basically, if they didn't have the sensor on top of the door and it went straight up into somebody's garage roof and smashed the glass or whatever, people would complain. So they've got a sensor there to, but it's basically because it's almost vertical, because it has to be, because it looks upwards to see. So I don't know what the solution is for that, apart from just use your finger to wipe the screen before you wipe the top of the sensor before you press the button.
Sure.
It's little things like that, and I suppose it's the more you live with the car, the more you find little things like that. That, like, I was driving the other day, so I've been telling people that, range wise, I did 220 miles down to where was it now? Wiltshire, and I had about 15% battery life. So I said, sort of real world driving, about 240 miles in the GT was probably about right, on cruise control at 70, keeping to the speed limit, sort of thing. And then this last weekend, when I went to the motorist, I drove there with the roof up, and it was terrible wet weather. Drove back with the roof down because it came out sunny, and then I drove with my wife quite a bit in the car because she wanted to go out with the roof down and everything. And I think in total we'd done about 150 miles. And we had about 25% left. So the battery that, but you see, we had the roof down, but heating on because it was only about 10 degrees. So the heating was basically trying to heat the world,
Yeah.
and briefly our faces. And so it was using an awful lot of power for the climate control. Normally, when I look at the climate control, it was using sort of, typically, I'd say sort of 5-6% of the drive power was being used by climate control. But on that day, it was around sort of 15-20%. And that's also because
I
at
think
the car show, my son had sat in the
so
car with the heat on.
the way I look at this, Tom, I look at it a slightly
Yeah.
different way. I'm now looking at always a miles per kilowatt, because I think that's a ma that in my mind, I don't care. The range is really miles per kilowatt is telling you how well the car is running, or how, and I'm just looking at I've averaged 4 miles per kilowatt on this, which I think actually, considering what it is and how it can do it, is not bad. 4.3 is what I could probably get in my five in the height of summer, maybe even slightly higher. But anything once we hit the winter, we're down to the threes. But it does it well. So in that respect, but also this is one thing that's another MG quirk, which everybody who drives an MG will be familiar with. It doesn't matter how hard you pray to say, will you stay in the mode I left you in? When you walk away and walk back again, it's back in comfort mode, and KERS is back to one. You
Yeah.
can't set it and leave it. It
Okay.
always, always, always reset. John will tell you it's done it on his car. Tom will tell you it's done it on it. It's done it on my five. They've never ever fixed that. It's always resets every single time.
So
Was going to ask,
if you put it
thanks,
onto
Leo.
one pedal driving, then it's doing curves basically all the time. Is that right?
Yeah, and it does
Yeah,
remember the
that should
one
be
pedal
correct.
driving mode.
It
It
does.
does.
Yeah,
Does it
exactly, which I've
remember
put on there.
one pedal? Okay. All right, I don't know about that. I haven't used
Okay.
one pedal.
All right, we'll come back to some of these issues. John, did you have any comments? I forgot to come to you. We were looking at the screen on the graphics and your
Yeah, I
experience of
just
that.
have one overriding thing I'd love to feed back to MG is that
Mm.
they've got these screens and you've got acres of space with nothing on, and the type is titchy. And why don't they blow the bloody type? Oh, sorry, the type up.
Yeah. I
It's just I
would
have to
agree.
put sometimes I'm driving
Yeah.
along and I have to put my glasses on to see something to adjust. And
Yeah.
the
Yeah.
Chinese all got amazing near vision or something, but I
I
just find
understand.
that
I feel your
really
pain, John.
exasperating. But
I feel your pain. It's the same with the odometer on the MG4. It's the
yeah,
tiniest font.
it's the same with the
Yeah.
ZS, the same, exactly the
Yeah.
same. They, for God's sake,
Yeah.
use the space.
Yeah, lots of acres of spare space.
There's
Okay,
acres,
I
and I
want to
think
take
this is
some.
a good example. Is so this the around the miles per, obviously I'm not driving, so they've got the performance that of how much you're pushing the battery or how much you're getting recovery in here. But the reality is you probably only use between those two most of the time. So this whole real estate over this side is not used. And it's like, so why haven't you just changed the scale so that you do use all this? And you know, even this side
Okay.
here, as you can see, is marked as unused.
Good point.
It just
I'll tell you
and
what,
when
Leo. Leo, we'll see if we can get you in touch with MG for screen feedback. It sounds like you'd have lots of good advice for them. I do want to take some questions from the chat because we've got quite a few building up. We can come back to this, so I'm more than happy to talk more about, foibles, things you like, things you don't like. But we've got a number of questions to go through. Rod Mason asked, why is the GT only in two-wheel drive when it's in comfort mode? Wouldn't four-wheel drive be useful in every mode, except perhaps track mode? So why has that choice been made? I guess is the question.
So,
I'm not sure we know the answer, but
the way I've read that actually from Rod is that why is he saying why is GT only two-wheel drive when in comfort? Because sport mode could also be two-wheel drive, I think he's thinking. That's where I've read his
okay.
comment. Clarify if you wish, Rod.
So it's the other way around.
And I suppose what you're thinking is, if you would you be able to have a bit more play with the car if it was in rear-wheel drive only mode? I suppose the point is with. And I think also, did anyone see there's a car dealer magazine video review went out yesterday, today, where they were driving the Cyberster and the IONIQ 5N and a Porsche 911 and a Mercedes and a Range Rover and stuff, doing basically their top cars of the year and sort of doing a bit of a road test with them in Wales. And when they were in the MG Cyberster GT, initially, they were in comfort mode, and they're saying, "Oh, it doesn't really feel like it could do 0 to 60 in 3 point whatever seconds. It feels a lot slower." Well, it would do, wouldn't it? Because it's basically limiting itself by being rear-wheel drive and limiting it to a maximum 340 horsepower. But even it, but that, and that's only if you absolutely floor it. So, I think that their sort of state was, "Oh, well, if it's in, it doesn't feel like a quick car all the time." It kind of is a car with two different driving styles in that sense. John, you won't have this as much because yours is the trophy, but with the GT, if you put it in comfort mode, it basically it's a very docile, easy to control car, usable on the motorway, but usable in the city, usable in traffic. It's just it's you know it's great. When you put it into sport or super sport mode, then you've got the ability to to have some fun, to put your foot down a bit more and go a bit faster. I think it would be nice if you could choose two-wheel drive or all-wheel drive in all the modes, because I think that if you put it in super sport and have it, so you'd have the fast throttle response, but you'd have it in rear-wheel drive only. I think that could be a nice way to drive as well. But I suppose they've just done it for simplicity, that they've, comfort is effectively an eco mode. It probably didn't feel right to call it an eco mode because it's a still got 300 odd horsepower, but it's a, yeah, comfort mode is effectively
Okay,
eco mode
gotcha.
and sports more, using the power.
Okay. That makes sense. I mean, again, that could be feedback. Maybe there'll be an option to change that. Okay, next question. Can we have more than one phone or login connected to the car as per other MG EVs, or is it one only?
It's the same iSmart system as in all the other MGs. So
Right.
you.
Okay. So Craig, who's asked this, the answer will be you use the same login details on the other phone, but only one phone can be logged in at any one time, is how it basically works. You can't register twice for the app. Dirk is asking, what about a trailer for a hitch for sorry, trailer hitch for a bike?
What?
Any chance of that?
I'm guessing Dirk is from
Take the well, it
Netherlands.
makes sense. Go out, nice day, go out for a drive,
I
take the
did look
bike,
this
go out for a
up.
ride.
I wanted to put a trailer hitch just for putting bicycles on the back when we're traveling, and you can't. You can't. It's not
No,
it's not rated.
I doubt that they'll put anything on. Now, in Netherlands, they have a bit of more laissez-faire attitude to this. So there was the Leaf had like a trailer hitch available for it when it was never available in the UK, because their legalities are that you can fit a bike hitch basically to most things as long as it can be made out of angle iron and
Might,
can stick out the back of the car. So there might be a
I'm
solution coming
wondering.
from a third party in Netherlands,
I'm also
but
wondering,
in the
might it be
UK, probably not.
possible to fix something onto the boot lid? Sometimes that's possible for carrying stuff.
Like one of those
So Boxsters,
like a
normally have
seas
the
hooker.
little, the Boxsters have that. I've seen that quite often on Boxsters. So maybe you
Yeah,
could.
but it's definitely going to be a third party thing, I think is what we're hearing. Okay. Cool. We've talked about over the updates, which is good. Has anybody had a problem with the wind deflector lifting up with the top down? Moira reports she's had this problem. It lifted halfway up and she had to push it down.
So this is it. This is the wind deflector. You can't actually put it in or out when the roof is up. You have to take it out. In fact, the first thing that I found was really annoying is driving with it in when the roof is up. It obscures the visibility quite a lot. So we were sitting there going, oh, but and then we realized we could, when the roof was down, we could take it out and put it to one
But
side and then
that
put it
makes
back. But it
sense.
hasn't come out during
It hasn't
driving.
moved. I think she's saying it's moving whilst driving. So maybe it wasn't clipped in, or there might be a problem with her specific one. John?
As a general comment on that subject, having an MGF as well, it is much windier in the Cyberstar than it is in my MGF has a similar screen deflector at the back, only much wider and higher than the one in the Cyberstar. But it's I'm only 5'8", so I'm not like sticking out the top or anything. But it is a windier cabin. Yeah, I don't know how you fit in it, Leo, but it's a windier cabin than the MGF, I must say. You need a like a cap on or something. I don't know if other people have felt that, but actually I've got more hair than everybody else looking at it.
I
But
personally, I found it quite sheltered actually. I've had the roof down a couple of times, and it was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. Because I'm sort of 6 foot 1, so I expected my head to be sort of sticking out the top. And you obviously heard all the reports about how high the seat was and how low the front of the windscreen was. But I think it's absolutely fine. Honestly, a lot less windy than I expected it to be, basically because of the deflector thing.
I'm sure it
We
depends. It depends on your body to leg ratio as
yeah,
well, I
I
guess.
so I'm 6'2", so I do hit, but I've had no problem about visibility. I thought I was going to have it, but I don't have any problem with that. We have our baseball caps in the back, my Watford one and my partner's Fulham one, so we, poor her. But we have those in there. When you have to drive with them when it's down, I think. But it's actually a really nice drive. I didn't have a problem. I didn't think it was that windy at all. And I didn't have much of a
That's good
problem.
to
We were
know.
driving around on Sunday
Yeah. I'm not
with
saying
it
it's a
down.
pro I'm not saying it's a
No.
problem. It's just compared to the MGF, then it is windier.
I wonder if that's related to the seat height. I mean, I must admit, John, most of the reviews I've read have said it's pretty good by modern car standards in this space. But maybe the MGF is particularly good at
Maybe,
keeping
maybe.
you cosseted. Last question for the moment. Where can we find the in-cabin fuse box? Does anybody know?
So there is a card that comes with the car which lists various different parts. I saw some questions about it. I haven't gone searching yet for it. I know this
Was
is
that a
so
card you were
it's
given
interesting
on
that,
collection, or was it in the
yeah, there's a
car when you
card you're
collected?
giving there. The
Right.
there is I think it was in Thailand that they are fitted. This is for putting in a camera. And I've seen in Thailand they put a camera there, something that it was MG branded. Funny enough, the car has cameras anyway, so I don't know if those cameras can be used for recording for
I don't know
for
if
that
that's
sort
the
of
reason for the
purpose.
question. It may just be out of interest. I mean, certainly in the MG4, there's several. There's one in the end of the dash, which is hard to get out, and then there's one near the glove box. But yeah, that's fine. I'm sure somebody will find out. Okay, cool. So, okay, what about we talked a little bit before about accessories. Who's bought, apart from Matt's, who's bought an accessory? What are the must-have accessories that you're aware of, or the ones
So
you'd
the
most
access
like to have?
yeah the accessory that I bought for it was little £30 Apple CarPlay Wi-Fi adapter,
Ah.
and again I think it's quite disappointing that with all the technology that's got in it hasn't got wireless for CarPlay.
Yeah.
It seems to be such a simple thing that it should have, but I guess it's just kind of overlooked more than anything else. But so that's that the mats and the charger leads, but I can't see there's much else you need. It's got the spec on it's amazing. It's got absolutely everything on it that I think you could want, really.
Neil, what happens if two of you get in the car with a phone, a Bluetooth phone? Does it connect to both? Does the dongle connect to both of the phones or what?
You've got to pre-connect your phone to the dongle anyway. So at the moment, my wife's not connected her phone to the dongle in the car. So I don't know, is the answer. But then, I mean, in other cars,
It usually connects to the last connected car, last connected phone. So my wife's currently got a Kia Sorento on hire, and I use that today. So I was the last person to connect to that. So if we both got in the car tomorrow, it would be my phone that connected out of preference. But basically, you just have to turn off your Bluetooth, whatever, and then it connects to hers instead.
We found that, and then in the end we found so that the ID3 does that, and it's always a fight as to which one it connects to, which one does it connect to, which one. So actually, in a funny way, having the cable, and it's my laptop is actually sitting on the in the center console. But what's quite clever, I think, is the way they've built the center console. The edge around the when you close it, there is a gap all the way around to run cable. So that's quite good. So you can actually, it doesn't matter where your cable comes out for your phone, it doesn't get trapped, which is quite useful. So we just found that it was easier to plug in so we know which one is there. Plus, as I said before, we're trying to use this car for long distances, so you just need to plug in. The disappointing bit, unfortunately, and we don't know why at the moment, the USB A socket works. The USB C socket, for some reason at the moment, just doesn't. Nothing, no
No
charge,
power,
nothing.
anything.
So that's
Okay, and
no, it doesn't give us a power or anything.
okay, that yeah. So I think that's slightly different from the four, where you can power a device from the USB-C socket, but you can't use it for the inbuilt CarPlay and Android Auto. I think it's lower power, lower wattage than the USB-A, and the one in the rear. Has anybody tried V2L? That's another question that's come up. Has anyone got the adapter? No
I haven't
camping
got it. It's
plans yet.
interesting. It's on the menus. So the menus actually tell you about the V2L. So it is there for you to see it, and you just choose it as V2L. I haven't tried it yet, to see how it works, or how that actually delivers.
Okay.
But I do want to use
Now,
it.
no, that would be good. That'd be cool when, to hear back from you when you have. Now, on the subject of 1.0 software, Leo, you just. Oh, all right. Before I go to
Sorry, in
that, John.
accessories, we can't leave accessories without revealing my boom mat,
Go for it,
which
John.
Stuart will bring up a picky, I'm sure, of my AliExpress boot mat, 20 quid off
Oh, of course,
AliExress,
yes.
my boot liner, red and black with red stitching, 20 quid
Looks
arrived in 3 weeks.
a
You
pretty
got.
good fit.
It is. It's tailored to the Cyberstones. Comes from China in 3 weeks for 20 quid. How do they do it? It's amazing.
Well,
You got to have
fantastic.
one of those
It
guys.
definitely one of the things I'm going to be buying because it's something
Yeah,
we have in our other cars is a
we
mat
got one
in a
for our
boot.
four.
I'm winning tonight, heads up. More miles, a better boot mat. I just got this game licked.
You're doing very well, John. Okay, so let's go back to the software. So, Leo, you discovered a problem with the left-hand drive version of the Cyberster that was in a video that you saw. I
There's
think we have a
a
still
video,
image.
yeah, exactly. There's a video. There's still image of this, and it's quite. So I'll see if I can compare that with
You can
what I
demonstrate the
have,
problem
when
first.
Stuart can get that up. So on my on the right-hand drive here, that map, that screen at the moment is like extra information, but you don't really need to touch it. The middle screen is normal. Is your main. Information that you need, and the left screen here is your map or your radio or everything you're going to do. On the left-hand drive cars, it's exactly the same layout. That means that map is now somewhere over in that corner over there. For a passenger, that it's untouchable. And I always find that when we're navigating somewhere, particularly if you're on Android Auto, I'm on my iPhone, but if you're on Android Auto, you can't type where you're going on Waze on the phone. You have to do it on the screen. And suddenly, my partner, you just can't type. You know what it's like when you're bouncing along in a car. And so there's just no way you can there. I don't know if they have, if there will be a software update to fix that. Also, the menus are on the wrong side in an iPhone at the moment in here. Normally, the menus in a phone are on the other side closest to you, closest to the driver,
Oh, you mean the
the bar
buttons? The
menu.
buttons?
The buttons, yeah. The
It's
buttons
supposed to
on
know
an
that you're on the right
iPhone
or on the left.
CarPlay. It doesn't. You can fix it on Android. We did physically fix it because you can switch it in Android. On an iPhone, you can't switch it at the moment. So it's like they mixed it up. I don't know. I assume these screens are interchangeable in theory.
I would
Somebody,
imagine it's
will
all
there be a
software.
software
Which
release?
screen it uses for what? So, but it may be more than just an infotainment update. I don't indeed. I don't know how they've done it with the multiple screens. Whether they are how each have their own update or they're all controlled together. We've also got a question about speakers. So speakers behind the seats don't seem to output any sound, says Rod, and no balance control. Is the center speaker behind the seats a subwoofer? Again, little or no output. Has anybody, I wonder if this is a settings issue. Has anyone played with the sound system?
So the rear speaker in between the seats, I'm led to believe is a subwoofer. And certainly when I've turned up my banging tunes, that's where I felt the bass to be coming from.
So you had a kicking bass. Yeah.
It did, it was dope.
It was dope. Fantastic. So that suggests either a settings problem, perhaps. Is there an equalizer?
There is, you've got treble, mid, and bass settings you can tweak. I just tend to turn the bass to about 7 plus, and then sort of because I like quite bassy sort of music. I like a lot of R&B and hip hop and stuff. So yeah, for me, the more bass, the better.
But they should be making sounds if properly configured. If there is, if they're not, then so go and ask the
Yeah, but
dealer.
again, with it being a subwoofer, it'll depend on the source material as well. So if you're listening to compressed music, or particularly if you're on DAB radio, you might not get the same sort of low bass frequencies that you would if you're streaming something at a higher bit rate.
Got it. Got it. Great. Okay. Summing up, guys, what do you love and what do you hate? Let's go through those two things, if anything, on either. And let's start with John.
I love the look of it. I just gaze at it out of the kitchen window lovingly. I just think it looks great, it makes people smile. Everybody who's come across it smiles, and they like it. I think the interior cabin is just a great place to spend your time. It's just beautifully designed and sits around you. I really like that. It's smooth. I love the easy out thing where the seat goes back and releases you out into the world. I think it's very practical, as I said, as an everyday card, and I love the tech. I just think it's great for all its foibles and all the rest. The fact it's there and you can play with it and do things with it, I just think it takes the cars to another level. I'm immensely happy.
Fantastic, good to hear. Neil.
Yeah, I mean, I think just to echo what John said there with regards to the design, but I think it's a fantastic looking car. Both inside and out. I love the technology in it. I think, as I said earlier on, I love the small attention to detail. Things like you can walk up to the car, press the button, the door will open. By the time I've actually physically got to the car, door's already open. I can get into it, sit down, put my seatbelt on, and at the same time, obviously press the button for the door to go down. And I'm ready to drive off straight away. And the car's ready for me to drive off straight away. I've not got to sort of sit and wait for it to light up or anything like that at all. So it's the way little things like that interact together, which, bearing in mind, it's the first generation of the car as well. That would have taken quite a lot of design to get those little bits and pieces there together. You can't do anything but love that performance as well. And super sport mode, when you put your foot down, it is just absolutely intoxicating. It's ridiculous. Criticism, high to the seat. I just love the seat to be just that little bit lower. It makes such a difference. It would make it feel a bit more sporty. But I mean, overall, a really, really good car, really exceeded expectations.
Fantastic. Good to hear. Leo.
Yeah, I'd echo what everybody said there. It's hit literally, if you're doing 10s out of 10, it's hit 10 out of 10 on virtually every single thing here. And even the bits that it hasn't, I do feel are repairable. They're not, as long as they do, and and we struggle with this, Tom, we struggle with this.
With software,
the MG must look after their customers that they've already got. I mean, that's a big thing because, with my five being a first generation five, they've effectively banned it. They're off. They're on to the second generation, and now that's going to be abandoned to be replaced by the four estate. It's like, guys, just, please, Tesla drivers get Christmas updates. We'd like to have an update or two just to feel that we're there. And
I'm sure there'll be some updates. Hopefully they'll be over the air. I mean, there certainly have been lots of updates
otherwise,
on other models.
On the positive side, Neil's absolutely right. I mean, this is easily the fastest car. I mean, I've driven 911s. I've driven lots of things. I used to race. This 0-30 miles an hour, and not 0-60, but 0-30 is like. I took somebody and I forgot to tell them to hold on to the handle. You have to tell them to hold on to the handle, put their seat, their back in their head into the headrest. I think Miles has probably be sued for whiplash on a few people he's taken out. It just goes, and it actually feels really nice around the corners. It does hold. It doesn't. You don't feel the back moving out much. It just feels nice on the drive.
Fantastic, thank you. Miles, anything to add?
Just something I just thought of, actually. When I was driving the car on Saturday, I got the battery down to about 20% and so it's interesting to see the effect that super sport mode has at lower battery levels. So it does start reducing it and limiting the amount of power that you can actually put into motors, and that's a function of the battery not having enough power in there to actually be able to do it. So if you're going to do a track day in the Cyberster, or if you want to demonstrate the acceleration to fullest, you need to kind of make sure that you've got a fully charged battery. And also battery temperature as well. So in the battery settings, which I don't know if any of you guys have played with, if you go to the battery settings, one of the options is for intelligent battery heating. And the second option is to remind you if you haven't got the battery heater on, whether you want to put it on if it's cold weather. Battery heating, as we found out with the MG4, does use quite a lot of actual energy itself in heating the battery. But if you are wanting to use the performance more, then battery heating is recommended because, again, a cold battery can't put out as much power as a warm battery. So I had a fully charged battery on Sunday morning, put it in super sport mode, and I was getting limited to about 75% power because it was only about 6 degrees outside. So I mean, that might be sensible, to be fair, if it's close to freezing, that it's limiting the power. But if you are wanting to demonstrate the performance properly and do it in Tesla 0-60 time and things like that, you need to make sure the battery temperature is nice and warm.
So, very quickly, journey before the track, warm up the car, warm up the battery, then charge before you go in.
Can I just very quickly, as Miles was talking about the menus, and we've talked about this before, so this is the charging menu, just to show you how many settings this thing has. There is a little tiny, so you've got all of the menus across the top about energy consumption, vehicle load when you're in the electricity
down and to the left, please, Leo. We can't
thank you
see.
Sorry, then charging when you're in the charging one, you then can click on it, then you've got even more set, then you've got all these settings here. And if you ever are bored in virtually all the menus, you can then pull down and there's something else hidden somewhere else. It is just, there are settings beyond settings beyond settings beyond settings in this car. It is quite amazing how much, I think, I'll pass over to Neil on that.
I was just going to say, actually, because as an EV novice, so battery heating, would the battery heat up itself naturally while you're driving it? So is battery heating something you need to do if you're taking it from
So
cold?
general with EVs, yeah. So if you do a long journey, I mean, you'll notice this when you come to do a rapid charge. If you do a long journey, just the act of driving the car, particularly if you're doing spirited driving, will warm up the battery as you have regen and as you draw power from it. And so you'll often find at the end of a long journey, it's a great time to do a rapid charge with any car because the battery's hot, the car, everything's warmed up. It'll take a large charge. It'll charge at a high rate. There is a battery heater. I'm assuming there's one in the Cybertruck. There is in the other MG EVs. The effect of that can be quite good, but it needs to be on. It takes quite a lot of power to run it, and it needs to be on for a while to make a difference. And so that's more intended, as my understanding. Miles can correct me if I'm wrong. That's more intended for when it's particularly cold. But yeah,
Yes.
the big problem is the battery has a large thermal mass, so it takes a lot of energy to warm it up. It's essentially the challenge. Anything to add on that, Miles?
Yeah, just say yes, the battery heater usually draws about 3 kilowatts. So it's basically it's trying to warm the it warms up the coolant, which then gets pushed around the battery. It's warming up water, which then has to flow around the battery pack to try and warm it up. It would take on a cold day, and if it's below 0 degrees, it's probably going to take an hour to heat the battery successfully to 25. During that time, it's going to use 3 kilowatt hours of energy or more, in addition to what you would already be using, to drive the car and everything else. If you're doing lots of short journeys, what you'll tend to find is that battery heating will kill your range because you'll do a short journey and effectively it'll be trying to heat up a mass, which it doesn't do very successfully because you then stop the journey and then you're wanting to heat up again the next time after it's already cooled down. So battery heating for short stop start journeys isn't recommended, but for longer journeys, it can get your battery to be more efficient at charging. It can get more power delivery. So if
It
you
can
want to see the
increase the
performance side of
range a
it,
bit as it
it
warms
can
up.
increase the range a bit. Battery heating, I'd say probably not for day-to-day round town commute sort of stuff, but definitely if you're doing longer journeys or if you want to show off the performance.
Cool. Okay. Well, folks, we've been talking for an hour already, and I know we could talk for another three on the Cyberster, but coming to the end of tonight. I just want to get to the other key topic I wanted to cover, which has happened in the news. This is MG4 X-Power owners. Now, briefly, for those who are not familiar, there has long been an issue with the MG4 X-Power that some people experience, which is a strange vibration, particularly between 65 and 75. And it was not known what the cause of this vibration was or what MG would do about it. Some time ago, a steering damper was produced in Australia, which has now become available elsewhere as an attempt to mitigate this, although many people have found that it doesn't resolve the problem. And then more recently in the news, some information came out. I don't know if it was officially released or leaked from MG around another fix, which was to do with changing the drive shaft and the suspension at the rear. But there was a communication that this was not going to be proceeded with because it didn't resolve the problem. And I do know that there's a number of owners out there who are not happy about this and who want to know if MG are going to resolve this problem or not. So I just wanted to give Miles a chance to correct us all on what the official line is, at least, so we all understand, exactly what MG is and isn't saying about this as far as he's been briefed himself. Remembering, of course, it's not up to him.
Yeah, so the tricky position this puts me in is that I've got a bulletin here from MG about the X-Power vibration issue, which it says, do not share this internal communication with anyone. It then says, if customers approach your comment, please summarize the above. I have to communicate what's in it. So it basically says, following on for MG Motor UK are aware of reports that some units of X-Power models display a vibration above certain miles per hour. Following a number of vehicle inspections, MG Motor UK has determined the vibration is road feedback being felt through the vehicle steering system above a certain speed, typically 55 miles per hour plus. This road feedback is a characteristic of the X-Power model and is due to the additional drive motor and modified suspension steering geometry compared to the normal MG4. It does not pose a safety or mechanical drivability issue. Due to the above, there's no repair necessary to be conducted on this model regarding the vibration. However, customers have expressed concern over the annoyance of the vibration and as always we're trying to obviously sort out driving enjoyment. Therefore, we've explored alternative options. The outcome of this testing is to fit a steering wheel damper, which reduces the feedback from the vehicle to the end user. The fitment of this damper has been proven to reduce vibration. However, due to component production tolerances, its effectiveness may differ from vehicle to vehicle. MG dealerships are welcome to fit this damper for customers who wish to explore this option if, upon road test, the characteristic is experienced by an MG technician as well. However, it needs to be communicated to the customer prior to fitment that there's no guarantee that this will remove all steering wheel vibration feedback. It says the development proposition about suspension replacement that was shared back in April is not something that's being explored for UK roads. The reason for this is it's unsuccessful in reducing the characteristic and therefore no actual point doing it. However, obviously the fact that it was shared on the forums meant that there was a massive influx of comments to the dealer network, technical team and customer service team from people saying, I want my suspension changing. Well, it didn't actually fix it anyway.
So do you know, Miles, I mean, I appreciate you may not know this, but I think some people were worried that that was going to be the end of the matter. MG wasn't going to do anything else. But do you know if there's any ongoing investigation or to a better fix?
It just says, should your customer wish to have a damper fitted to explore the possibility of reduced vibration, then please explore this option for them. Repair instructions, etc., can be found on TRIP, which is the UK.
Yeah, so that's pretty much the text that I saw as well. Yeah, so it's for clarity, folks. You can explore the steering damper option. I think you'll have to request that forcefully from your dealer, and it may help.
The dealer will need to qualify that they experience the same issue and that it's not, you know, emperor's new clothes.
They'll have to reproduce it. And at the moment, that's the answer we have. It may not be the answer you'd like, but that's the answer we have. And we await developments. Okay. Right. Well, that brings us to the end of tonight. Thanks for that, folks. So just to say to everybody, please vote again in the poll to decide the topic for the next podcast. The link to the poll is in the video description. Please reply in the podcast thread. You can find an audio version of this podcast on all good podcast providers. Just search for the MG EVs Community Podcast. That's it for us tonight. Many thanks to the volunteer moderators who keep our forums running smoothly. That's Olb, Kalum, and Rolf. And many thanks from Stuart to the podcast who dedicate their time to share their wisdom with the community. My personal thanks to everyone tonight. Thanks to Liam Indell, John Sponsmith, Neil Marshall, and Miles Roberts from Chorley Group. If you found this podcast useful, please click on the like button. And also, if you subscribe and click the notification bell, you'll get notified next time we go live, which is particularly useful if we happen to change the day at the last minute. We'll be back very soon. It just remains for us all to say goodbye to you all. Thanks, folks.
Goodbye.
Good night.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye.